Okay, I don't hear anybody, so I'll assume that there are no members of the press present. Okay, David, you can get started.
All right, I'm calling this Four Point Channel Landmark District Commission public hearing to order at 6 p.m. on October 14, 2021. And currently present are Commissioners Tom Rohde, Lynn Smilage, and myself, Baraducci. We're waiting for Sue Gorganian and John Karoff. When they come in, we'll announce them. You can participate in this hearing by going to our Zoom meeting link found on the public notice page or by calling 929-205-6099 and entering meeting ID number 891-9136-5404#. You can also submit written comments via email to fortpointldc@boston.gov. So today the commission will be holding a public hearing to review design review applications in accordance with the Commonwealth of Massachusetts executive order suspending certain provisions of the open meeting law. We are conducting this meeting online to ensure public access to the deliberations of the Four Point Channel Landmark District Commission. The public may access this call through telephone and video conferencing. Members of the public will have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on the applications and discussions. To do so, raise your hand in the application via the Zoom meeting platform. If you're calling in and cannot use the platform, you can send your questions to staff via email at fortpointldc@boston.gov. And I'll repeat these instructions for raising your hand when we get to public comments. All right, so we're, as Mary had said, we're doing a little out of order. We're gonna do the administrative approvals first. And these were applications that came before the Landmark staff, and they were approved by the staff based on their adherence to the standards and criteria. So our vote at the end of my reading them in would be to accept their findings. So the first is application number 22.0343, 381 Congress Street. At the Congress Street elevation, remove copper cornice to, remove copper cornice to repair underlying masonry and reinstall and replace in kind. At the rear elevation, install mock-ups for cleaning, repairs, and masonry coating. The next was application 22.0223, and this is at 383 Congress Street. And it's regarding at the seasonal patio at the Boston Wharf Road facade, replace stationary fabric wall panels with power-operated retractable panels. Work previously was approved administratively at the March 12, 2020 public hearing. So the motion would be to accept the staff's approval of these applications.
So moved.
Okay. And a second?
Second.
All right. So that is Sue Gorganian has just joined us then.
Sorry.
And is John Karoff on?
I am, David,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, so you, John, you need to recuse yourself, I understand, from these?
I am recusing myself from both of these, correct, yes.
Okay, great. All right, so the vote, let's, Tom Rohde, how say you? Is he on?
I think we lost him.
All right. Well, let's start then with, how about Lynn? Lynn Smilage.
I'm sorry, what?
This is the vote for approving.
Oh, geez. I'm sorry. I seconded it. I thought I was done. No, yes, I approve.
All right, and Sue Gorganian?
Yes.
All right. And Tom, are you there? All right. If he's not there, then I also approve of this and that meets our quorum. So that is passed. All right. Now let's get to the first item on the agenda.
Oops, sorry.
This is a violation, and it was application 21.0754. at 253 Summer Street. And this is a continuation from the April 8, 2021 and the June 10, 2021 Fort Point Channel hearings, public hearings. And this is regarding the proposed work, is ratify a patio expansion, including the installation of pavers, planters, lighting, and associated landscape. The violation number here is VIO.21.009. All right, so if the applicant is here, they can introduce yourselves and start.
Yes, good evening, Commissioners. Erin Doherty with Epsilon, and I'll be presenting on behalf of the project team. I'm joined by Chris Jamison from Lolita and also Eric Nesto from Synergy, along with some other members of the project team. As a recap, as the chair just mentioned, we were last before you in June to discuss the patio extension at Lolita. And at that time, the overall construction of the patio was approved, but there were some remaining questions about the steel planter that was proposed for the west edge of the patio along the harbor walk. So there was a request at that time to look at lowering the height of that planter so that it looks more like a planting bed right up against the harbor walk. And also for some additional drawings, specifically a section drawing to illustrate the relationship of that planter to the patio and also the harbor walk. So we have that tonight. And also there was a request for a planting plan that incorporated some more native plant species. So we have that as well to present. If we can go to the next slide. So this is, I think we're all familiar, the building at 253 Summers Street. This is a plan view of the patio extension. So the boundaries of Necco Court are marked in red, and then the patio extension is in yellow and orange. And that portion is orange is the area that sits within the waterfront area where private use is not permitted. So that is the area that will be infilled with the larger planter at the edge of the patio's dining area. Next slide. This is just a more detailed view of the patio extension, the original patio and pergola to the left. And then at the lower edge is that footprint of that larger planter that we discussed previously. Next slide. Just as a reminder, a couple of existing conditions photos. This is from Necco Court looking out toward the channel. Next slide. Closer view looking out toward the channel of that patio area. Next slide. And then this is looking north along the harbor walk, and you can see that existing Cortem planter up against the harbor walk path. Next slide. So this is the planter in question, highlighted in red. If we go to the next slide, we have the section view. So the overall planter height has been reduced to 1 foot 4 inches from the 2 foot 6 inches that was previously proposed. And so that will extend about 5 inches above the grade of the harbor walk at the northernmost point where this patio extension meets the old patio. The harbor walk does slope down slightly as it moves south. So a bit more will be exposed of the planter at the southern end, but it's about 5 inches at the northernmost point. And the team did look at reducing the height even further, but the landscaping team felt that anything under a foot and 4 inches really wouldn't sustain healthy plants. So that was their recommendation, not to go lower than that. You can go to the next slide. So with regard to the planting plan, we understood the desire for kind of sturdy plants that would be common in a waterfront area like this, more native plants as opposed to ornamental. So the landscaping team selected a number of species that are shown here. If you can go to the next slide. And this is the planting plan for that larger planter up against the harbor walk. And I believe that's the end of the materials that we have to present this evening. Thank you.
David, we can't hear you.
That's why, because I'm muted, that's why. Sorry. All right, so you on the Harbor Walk, it's going to be a Corten edge and it's 5 inches. Is that what you said?
Yes. So it extends 5 inches above the grade of the harbor walk.
Yep.
And slightly more at the south end because of the way that the harbor walk slopes down to the south.
Okay. So the top of the Corten is level then.
Yes.
Okay. So do you know when as the harbor walk slopes, what's the reveal of the Corten at that point? Do you have an idea?
The lowest point. Jeff, are you on? Jeff is the project architect. He may have that measurement.
All right. I mean, just was what I'm getting at is if you do need more planting depth, and I think you have what, 1 foot, is that 4 inches?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. If you needed a little bit more, you know, I don't see why you couldn't raise a little bit higher the reveal of that Corten along the harbor walk. In other words, if you've got a 6 inch minimum, then, you know, maybe you're only going to be getting another inch, but I mean, at least it'll give you a little something more. I basically what I'm getting is I don't want to see something like a foot, but if it's in the 6 to 8 inch reveal, I think that's probably fine. And then you have here, okay. And then the inside of the patio, that Corten, that wall will be the same height as at the harbor walk. Is that correct?
So the inside height is 1'4" from the patio grade. Is that what you're asking?
Right, but the top of that wall, they're basically the same height as the top of the wall on the inside and the top of the reveal at the harbor walk, I'm guessing. It looks like the drawing is the same, yeah. So I think that's just barely enough soil. I mean, it would be better if it was 18 inches. But I think this could work. What and underneath this now, is that just going to be pavers directly under it?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm just trying to think, how is that going to be draining? Are you just going to expect that the water will percolate through the cracks of the pavers?
I believe so. Chris or Jeff, do you?
Yeah, they're permeable pavers. So the entirety of the patio is constructed from the same permeable pavers.
Yeah.
So, you know, the little holes in the bottom of the Corten planter, we would anticipate would just kind of drip through those.
Is there a reason that you're not removing some of them in there just to make sure that it, because, you know, those, my concern is those little openings could get clogged over time.
I think it's a pretty significant amount of open space on the pavers. It's not only just, you know, sort of in them, but the gaps in between is just sort of that little crushed stone. The planter itself is hundreds and hundreds of pounds. At this length, it's upwards of 1,000 pounds. So we really need that extra support there. If we went down and tried to put this on dirt or just crushed rock or sand or something like that, my concern is that would eventually, you know, compress, potentially pull it away from the harbor walk. And I think it makes more sense to leave it on the planters.
All right. And then how are you supporting the Corten? Is it, you know, how are you supporting that edge? Cause it's not a U-shaped planter, correct? I mean, you're creating two separate edges.
It's going to be closed. It's going to be a big trapezoid. So if you sort of pull back one of the plan views here.
Yeah. So all four sides will be connected.
Correct.
Now you're saying it'll just be freestanding.
Correct. So I'm sure we'll probably just have bolts, invisible bolts in between to put it together. Again, this will be, you know, well over 1,000 pounds before you put dirt in it. So we're going to have to find a way to connect it, but it's not going anywhere once it's connected.
Right. And then, and you're going to ensure that the top of the Corten is going to be a consistent elevation all around.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reason we need the planters. I mean, I'm sorry, the pavers. We need that. We need that base to be able to put.
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that the pavers aren't perfectly level, so you might need to shim somehow just to make sure that has a consistent top of grade. Yeah, I mean, I guess I understand your need for the, I just want to make sure it's going to drain properly. When I said remove some pavers, I was just thinking some in the middle, just to make sure that drains through. But
we've had all the Corten planters there since we built the patio earlier this year. So, you know, we haven't had any drainage issues that I've noted, and none of the pavers are discolored. So I think it will drain, and if not, we can deal with
them. And the planters that were there, were the plantings in them, were they permanent or were they just seasonal?
Seasonal.
Yeah. So, you know, that you're putting in permanent plantings. That's why I think that you need to just pay a bit more attention to the growing environment there, because these are going to be expected to survive. And what you're creating is a shallow planting bed that will freeze solidly in the winter. And then it'll, you know, what you get is this freeze thaw that will happen. And that does a number on plants that are expected to survive that. So I just feel like if you can remove some of the center pavers in there to make sure that that's freely draining, I think that would be the best way, and leave all that you need to do around the perimeter to make sure that that Corten wall is supported properly. So, and the plants are fine. I think that's, you know, the arrangement that you've shown, the design is, I think, will be fine. With that, the other commissioners have any thoughts on this?
I do not. I think I understand what's happening here, and I don't have any concerns with what I'm seeing.
Okay.
Can't speak to the plant material, but beyond that.
Yeah. Oh, that's another question I will ask then. The Conservation Commission, I know they said they wanted plants that are indicative of this shoreline condition. Did they suggest this palette, or was this something that you guys came up with based on their request?
I believe this was developed based on their recommendations.
And they don't need to see it. They didn't request to see the palette or anything. So
I think as long as they're within the kind of native realm, it should satisfy them.
And just do you have is there a landscape architect working on? Who's the one that made the choices of these plants?
Cityscapes. So they do a lot of plantings around the area.
They're familiar with all the plants that will survive in this area. So, okay. I mean, I think these will be fine. I think they look good. So, all right. So if there's no other comments from the commissioners, we can open it up for public comment. And if we can get that script up. Okay, so members of the public will now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on the application and discussions. To do so, please raise your hand via the Zoom meeting platform. If you're calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press *9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at fortpointldc@boston.gov.
Joshua Johnson, if you would like to go ahead and make your comments now, you'll have 2 minutes.
Great, thank you. I guess 2 questions. So the first is, should the site plan show umbrellas that are currently there, or what is the plan for the umbrellas on the expansion? And then question number 2, I believe there were some violations related to the speakers in the existing patio. I believe the commission told you to change the direction of those. Not sure if there's been any progress with those, and if there hasn't, how that plays into the approval for the changes discussed at tonight's meeting.
Okay, thank you for that. That's a good point. I mean, we did discuss that at the previous hearings, and I know we made that request to limit the number of speakers for one thing, and then to reorient them. And I don't know, have you provided any drawing to the landmark staff for their approval on that?
I didn't know that a drawing was requested. I did know that the number of speakers was requested to be reduced to 8. Since we were here last, we've basically cut the circuit, you know, one of the amps to half of those speakers.
Yep.
We haven't pulled them all down yet because those speakers won't exactly fit. They won't fit up between the joists. And so we have to order new speakers, which we'll install before next spring. The way that we left it was I was asked to get 8 speakers up into the joists as much as possible, and that's what we're going to do.
All right.
But they had to be purchased new. So that's in process. That's been done.
Okay.
They won't be here in time for winterization, so we'll do that before we reopen next spring.
All right. And then I know the issue of the umbrellas, we had asked for the elimination of the umbrellas on that expanded park portion to keep that view corridor open as much as possible. And I'm assuming that that's also going to be,
We eliminated the lights that were requested to be eliminated. Right. We eliminated the posts that were requested to be eliminated. My understanding from the letter was that the umbrellas, if they were sort of tucked towards the patio, were okay.
Yes, they're the ones closest to the patio.
We're doing our best to do that. Okay. And there are umbrellas out there, but they're down and should be tucked off whenever they're not in use.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. All right, looks like we have another hand up, Tom Reddy.
Yes, Tom Reddy, you can go ahead and make your comments now. You'll have 2 minutes.
Thanks, Mary, and thanks, Commissioner. Hey, and a question maybe for Chris. The Commissioner referenced it. The concern would be that over time, the plants, just some of them would require to be replanted, right? Because honestly, they just die. There's that area can be tough with plantings along the Harbor Walk. We see that now. And Chris, I just want to make sure that you guys have factored in the need periodically to replace what happens to die off.
Yeah, Cityscapes does all of our plantings every season. So they would have a maintenance contract on them, and they would either replant or they water all our plants. We don't even water our plants. So they have a maintenance contract, and anything that dies is replaced, and they generally replant seasonally. So that's on them.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Sarah McCammond, you can go ahead and make your comments now. You'll also have 2 minutes.
First of all, welcome back, Mary. Sarah McCammon, Ford Point resident. Just a couple of questions. I wasn't able to determine the exact dimensions of the new planting bed. So if we could get the exact dimensions. Also, I was curious, is that going to lead right up to the first table of the patio? Or are you also then within your patio, taking the room to install the existing planters to create sort of a wall between the planting bed and the patio. So if you could go over a little of that. And then last but not least, Chris, just so that you know, perhaps, and it could be just a communication issue with your staff, maybe those three umbrellas that are not supposed to be up could just be removed and off the premises, because we do see them out there. And so that would just be maybe helpful for your staff to be in compliance with the commission.
To your specific question, no, this new planter will replace the existing planters. There won't be planters in between this planter and the tables.
Okay, and what is the exact dimension of the planting area?
I don't have that offhand. It's whatever we're it's whatever that line is as it's sort of demarcated by the Conservation Commission. So whatever that is going to set the shop drawing for the planter.
Sure, I think it would be helpful if that goes on file, just so there doesn't raise questions in the future. That's part of the application. And then we talked a lot about the view corridors in and out of the from NECA Court to the historic seawall and back into the district. And so my question is a little bit, and I'm sorry, it probably shows in that elevation diagram, just like how high are the plantings in the new planting bed? Just trying to really understand that view corridor and at what level.
That's in the slide, which you can reference. The height of the plants is in the slide, referencing each individual height of each plant.
Yeah. So there's probably nothing that looks like nothing higher than I see the 2 to 3 feet looks like the highest.
It would be about a foot and a half above the planter at the highest point.
Yeah, and I think that will be fine, because previously you had planters that were higher up, correct? And then you had the plants on top of that.
Correct.
So this will keep the visibility open, I think, if that's what you're asking, Sarah.
David, that is exactly what I was asking. So the planters, the new planter for the planting bed area, how tall is that? Is that what, that 4 feet 10 that you were talking about earlier? Or I was a little confused.
So the planter up along the Harbor Walk is 1'4" tall.
Okay. Yeah, from, well, all right.
Above the Harbor Walk.
You're talking, no, it's not. You're talking about the reveal from the Harbor Walk to the top of the planter. You said was going to be 5 inches to maybe 8 or so as the Harbor Walk tapers down, correct?
So it will be from about 5 to almost 12 at the lowest point.
At the very lowest, okay.
Yes.
All right. So that is that answering your question, Sarah, about the amount of reveal that you're going to see along the back of the Harbor Walk. Because the thing is, they needed to have the adequate depth and to lower that any further, the top of that Corten, you're going to seriously jeopardize those plants from surviving at all. You'll be coming in with a soil mix less than 1'4".
No, thank you. That's helpful. And the existing planters are going to still create your back wall. In this diagram correct. That we're looking at right here.
That's correct.
Oh, the opposite side. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so
The plants themselves will be replaced with this pallet. The existing planters will remain.
So that's at
30 inches.
30 inches, and then the plants that you have today and the plants that you're talking about could be 2 feet above that. Correct.
Correct.
Okay, is that that answer your concerns, Sarah? And
yes, thank you very much.
All right, Mary. Okay. Anybody else coming through?
No, I don't see anybody else raising their hand, and I don't see any emails, so I think it's okay to close public comments.
All right. I think probably the important part that came out with this public comment is the fact that. You probably are going to have these plants replaced from time to time. I really think you're going to see that that's a tough, very shallow environment, and that's going to be tough for those plants to survive the winter. But as long as you're committing to having your landscape company come in and maintain that, then I think that's fine if they need to replace it as required. So maybe that could be, but we'll put that in as a proviso just to make sure. And I think the height of it looks fine. You know, I think you're going to quickly know whether or not there's adequate drainage in there, and your landscape company will certainly be able to determine that. Because if it doesn't drain freely enough, you're going to get like a bathtub in there, and the plants will certainly reflect that over saturation of soil. And if that's the case, then you would need to go in and remove some of those pavers in the center portion so that there's that drains down to the subgrade below. Mm-hmm. All right. So with that said, is somebody willing to form a motion out of that?
I'll make a motion to accept this as presented.
And then can we just, with the proviso that the plants...
With the proviso.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
All right.
David? And,
yes.
Sorry to interject. So is the only proviso that the plants need to be replaced from time to time, or are you also including the proviso about the pavers?
I think we should, I know what the, Chris, I think that was your name. I understand what you're saying, the need for the support of along the perimeter of that, but I don't know why in the center of that planter, you can't remove like a two rows or I think they, I don't know if they run horizontal to the planter.
Yeah. I'll remove a couple of pavers right beneath the drain holes if that makes difference. That's fine. I don't mind removing a couple. I just it didn't make sense to kind of remove the whole thing. So
no, certainly not the whole thing. I understand the need for support. So I think if you work with your landscape company and tell them the goal is to make sure that there's going to be adequate drainage here, they'll want to conform to that. So all right. So yes, no Mary, that's fine. Think that could be a second proviso to. make sure that there's some plants, some of those bricks are removed to get the drainage down to the subgrade.
All right. I second that second proviso.
Okay, great. So we need to take a full vote then. Okay, Commissioner, did we have a second on that?
Yes, Tom.
Yes.
Seconded.
Okay. All right, so Commissioner Smilich.
Yes.
Gorgonian?
Yes.
Karoff?
Yes.
And Rohde?
Yes.
And the chair votes yes. All right, thank you. I look forward to seeing this. All right, next item. Let me get my agenda back up here. The next is application 22.0419, and it's at 44 Farnsworth Street, and the proposed work is install new signage. So if the applicant is here, they can introduce themselves.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm Laurel Christensen with Dyer Brown, applicant of this signage proposal on behalf of our client, Zealand Pharma. And you can go to the next slide. So this is the existing building location at 44 Farnsworth Street at the end of that dead end street off of Congress. And the entry, the way that we're looking at is to the left-hand side of that existing photo. You can go to the next slide for a closer view. So this is where the proposed sign will be located. Again, these are the existing conditions. We're proposing a new tenant sign below the existing JSI sign. You can jump to the next slide. Again, another kind of close-up of existing conditions, and next slide. So this is the proposed sign for the Zealand Pharma tenant. It's the same size as the existing JSI sign mounted within the kind of edges of the existing concrete column there. It is pin mounted, which is the same mounting method for the JSI sign. And it's a quarter-inch aluminum panel with raised letters for the Zealand logo, and there's some colored circles there to indicate their brand colors. Again, kind of same size overall. The backdrop is the aluminum, but a slate colored finish, and then the logo text is white on that circular background. And that's essentially the scope of it. You're muted, David.
David, you're muted.
I was coughing away there and I needed to keep you, keep it quiet. So
I'm sorry.
That's all right. All right. So I see that the dimensions I think are going to be fine, but, and I'm sorry, you said the material was going to be aluminum. Yeah, I see aluminum. Okay.
Yeah.
And there's no lighting on this or anything. It's just going to be what it is. I mean, I don't have any issues with it. Do the rest of the commissioners feel strongly about anything?
I just have a question about how many tenants there are in this building and if there's going to be more signs coming.
Good point.
That's a good question. Not 100% positive. I don't anticipate it because JSI, I believe, is the anchor tenant in this building. And Zealand Pharma is renting the or leasing the penthouse suite, the upper level on the ninth floor. I don't think at this entrance there would be any additional signage. There is an entrance on the other side of the building, which I think if any other tenants did add signage, it would be there and not on this side.
Okay. And then if there's another tenant and you want to put another sign, you're going to have to come before us again.
Yes.
And so we'll be able to make a determination then if it's just going to be too much in the way of signs. So. All right. Any other comments?
I think it's a clever logo.
It really had me for a second or two.
Yes, me too.
Had to read Zealand. Oh, wow. Very, very
credit for it myself, but
yeah. And you know what? I mean, it kind of jazzes it up a little bit, that column. It seems to me, at first I was, oh gosh, don't we just want more gold?
Right.
You know, we did, but some of those streets have way too much gold to begin with. So this is a nice departure.
And it is their logo. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yes, there would be no point making it gold.
All right. If there's no other comments, we can open it up for the public. And members of the public will now have an opportunity to ask questions and provide public comment on the application and the discussions. To do so, please raise your hand via the Zoom meeting platform. If you are calling in and cannot use the platform, you can press *9 to raise your hand, or you can send your questions to staff via email at fortpointldc@boston.gov. So we'll wait a bit and if there's nothing coming through.
I don't see anybody raising their hand and I don't have any emails. So okay. I think this one is pretty straightforward and okay to close the public comment.
Great. All right. So if one of the commissioners would like to form a motion.
This is an easy one. I'll jump in.
Yeah.
Accept the application as proposed.
Okay, and a second.
Second.
All right, so Commissioner Karoff.
Yes.
Smilage.
Yes.
Garganian.
Yes.
Brody.
Yes.
And Chair votes yes. All right, that was quick and easy. Thanks.
Thank you all.
All right. Wow, okay, is that it?
Yes, that's it for design review.
That's it. All right. We have this advisory, huh? Is that mm-hmm. what? Okay. All right. This is an advisory review at 7 Channel Center Street. And the proposed work is construct a new building. That's a little vague. We may need to see some of that, but all right. Okay.
Fairly all encompassing.
All right. So if the applicant is here, you can start in. So there won't be any vote. This is just advisory, and you're just looking for our feedback on this.
That's correct, commissioners. My name is Matt Price. I'm with the applicant, the owner, Westbrook Partners, joined tonight by Aaron Doherty with Epsilon and our architect team, Perkins and Will, who will take you through the presentation. But you're correct. Tonight is an advisory hearing. We're really looking for your feedback. We're early in the process here and just beginning the process with the community and yourselves, and really looking for feedback, and wanted to kind of present to you what we have in mind, and look to incorporate that into a more formal request for design approval in subsequent months here. So just quick overview before I pass it over to the Perkins and Will team. What we're proposing here with the existing three-story building is an addition to convert this into a 9-story building, office and R&D use, which is really consistent with the parameters within the plan development area 53 here. So we're really looking to meet those requirements and ultimately looking to honor the historic building here. And ultimately, that's what we're looking for your feedback on, is how we're treating that existing three-story building and how we'd propose to incorporate the additional 6 stories while still maximizing the efficiency of the building. So really looking forward to your feedback. We'll turn it over to Matt from Perkins and Will, and we can open it up for questions thereafter. Thank you very much.
Okay, hello everybody. I'm Matt Pierce from Perkins and Will Architects. And if we can go to the next slide, excuse me. So just a quick overview, I think as Matthew led into, you know, we're talking about an overall 9-story building for R&D and office uses with modern forward floor heights for the new construction, while also retaining the historic value that everybody appreciates about this neighborhood and about this particular building. So we'll go through the existing conditions and context. Aaron from Epsilon has some historic plans and photographs of the building in the past. And then we'll focus on first just the approach to renovating the existing facades on the front, which you kind of see in the background of the slide here, and also on the rear, which is the east side. We'll talk about how to deal with, or what we propose for the east facade, which is on Medallion Avenue, which currently is set back out of alignment with the adjacent buildings and the rest of the street wall. how we're going to deal with things like what are currently loading bays and then the current windows and replacing those. So, and then after we talk about the three-story historic existing base, then we'll talk about a strategy that we propose for the new construction above that. So go to the next slide. And just to orient everybody, this is the location of 7 Channel Center between Channel Center Street and Medallion Avenue, in between 9 Channel Center and 5 Channel Center. If we go to the next slide, you can see one of the unique characteristics of this building is that it is actually a three-story building, whereas most of the other buildings in these two blocks are about 7 or 8 stories and have a very consistent building height. So this one is sort of the anomaly in the neighborhood, and it's a bit of, you know, of a unique condition. Next slide. Just a couple of pictures. We'll have more detailed pictures of the facades themselves, but this kind of locates the building in context. This is two photographs on Channel Center Street with 9 Channel Center to the left, which is north, and then 5 Channel Center to the right, which is south. And again, those are both, I think 5 Channel Center is a 7-story building and 9 Channel Center is 8, but they're roughly the same height and the same height of those other buildings in the neighborhood. So as you can see, 7 Channel Center is the unique one within the block. If we go to the next slide, this is the east side of the building, which is the back, the rear. You can see 5 Channel Center on the upper left slide, and you can see how the rear facade of 7 Channel Center is actually set back from the building wall, which is, again, kind of unique within the neighborhood. Everything else kind of holds the same building line. And then the lower right slide is looking north, kind of northeast up Medallion Avenue. Next. And then Aaron, if you'd be able to talk about some of the historic aspects of the building.
Yes, thanks, Matt. So we did look into the history of the building to better understand its early uses and changes to the building over time. So the building was constructed in 1914 by the Boston Wharf Company. We didn't find any historic associations or internal connections with the buildings to either side at 5 and 9, aside from the fact that they were both built by the Boston Wharf Company. The building was designed by Morton Safford, who designed many buildings across the district. It was purpose-built as a three-story warehouse. It originally had a platform at the rear of the building to access a rail spur that used to run along Medallion Avenue. None of that survives, but that explains the setback of this building, which we'll look at in more detail. Changes to the building over time. There was a mezzanine level added inside the building sometime between 1923 and 1950. Some of the windows, original windows, have been replaced. And as I mentioned, that rear loading platform has been entirely removed. We identified the first tenant of the building as Columbia Steel and Shafting of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. They were makers of iron and steel products. They occupied the building from 1914 when it was first constructed to 1922 and used it as a storage warehouse. Some of the later tenants were a paint manufacturer, Glidden Company of Massachusetts, a wholesale paper distributor. Rudder and McNaught was at the building for several decades, and Lyons Metal Products was also at the building, among other tenants. Next slide. This is a detail from a 1910 atlas of South Boston showing the future location of the building. Midway itself, which is what Channel Center used to be called, was laid out in 1897, but it really wasn't fully built out until the 19-teens. Next slide. This is the 1919 South Boston atlas showing nearly the full build out of that east side of Midway, including the 7 Channel Center warehouse occupied by Columbia Steel at that time, the building's first tenant. Next slide. This is a historic fire insurance atlas of the property outlined in red. And here you'll see the footprint of the building and also the platform at the rear. Next slide. This is the 1950 fire insurance atlas. You'll see insertion of a partial mezzanine level within the building, but otherwise it remained largely the same in plan. Next slide. So we have conducted a fairly extensive search for original building plans or historic photographs of the property to document its changes over its history, and specifically to try to document the original window configurations to inform the proposed design of the new building. We unfortunately have not yet been able to locate any of that really early documentation, but we do have this survey that the Landmarks Commission completed in 1980, and we noted that it does show retention of 6/6 windows at the third and first floor. So we suspect that that was the original design for the facade, and you'll see how that has been incorporated into the proposed design. I believe with that, if we can move to the next slide, I will pass it back to Matt.
Okay. So this is a photograph of the building today, or probably 2 months ago. With some annotations. So the existing building, obviously brick, with some of the defining characteristics noted on the right-hand side. excuse me. There's a stone kind of apron for the two loading bays on the side. Stone sills, excuse me, below the windows that span from pier to pier. You know, have a brick pier. There are, you know, five piers and four bays across the facade. So those stone sills span pier to pier. You see the existing double hung and divided light windows on the ground floor. And as Aaron mentioned, obviously boarded up and missing the windows on the third floor and in some places on the second floor, but assuming those were, they were at some previous time divided light 6/6 windows. We also have those, ornamental stone features, which are really unique to the building at the top of the piers. We call on the left-hand side, calling out just the floor levels of the building. Right now, the entrance, the door that you see to the left is act grade, but actually the floor level is at the loading dock level inside. If we go to the next slide. And this is a drawing of the proposed modifications to the existing facade, which are primarily, you know, to keep all the window openings the same, as much of those as possible. I think the only ones that really are changed are the loading bays, which will no longer reuse for loading purposes. So replacing the divided light windows on all the levels, replacing the roll-up loading door, which is in the second bay from the right, with glazing, similar to what you'd see at Five Channel Center. And then on the first bay on the left, we have the existing door to the left, and then to the side of that is where the current loading dock roll-up door is now, and that would become the entrance to the building. So that would, you know, obviously bring the doors to the grade level, and the new floor level would essentially be roughly at grade level. So there would be a new floor. All the floors inside, of course, will be new. And that new floor at the ground level will be, you know, roughly at ground level. So not a almost 3 feet above grade. So we would be retaining that stone apron for the loading bay, the one towards the center that has a new glazing above it. And again, all those same features, such as the ornamental stone details, the sills, and all of those would be preserved and repaired as necessary. And we're not showing anything, any of the new construction above us at this time. We really just focus on the changes to the lower level here.
Matt, I'm sorry, before you go on, would you mind just flashing back to the previous slide, Mary, mm-hmm. for a sec? I just want to get a before and after kind of, okay. And then forward. All right. Okay. I kind of like the boarded up look myself, but that's just I'm kidding. Sorry.
That might compromise the desirability to some of the tenants.
Yeah, just slightly, yeah.
Daylight, you know.
I've actually been inside that building because it was used for storage for a while, and it's pretty bleak.
Yeah. Okay. We can go to the next slide. So the next slide just shows that issue that I noted in the overview of the presentation, that on the east side, which is the rear of the building on Medallion Avenue, the existing facade is set back somewhere on the order of 7.5 feet from the building line of the remainder of the street. Every other building on the street on Medallion Avenue, and I believe also on Channel Center Street, are kind of at the same plane. So this one is a bit unique in that it is set back from the neighboring facades. And when we met with some members of the advisory committee, you know, we talked about, can we preserve the setback nature of that facade, but move it forward? It will be reconstructed regardless of whether it stays in the same place or moves. So, you know, it's going to be reconstructed no matter what. And the desire would be to maintain, you know, some setback, but reduce that setback. So if you go to the next slide, what we're proposing is to maintain a setback on the order of 12 inches that will allow you to see the neighboring brick walls. You can kind of see the thickness of the wall as the brick turns the corner. So maintain that, you know, the out of plane nature of that facade, but move it forward when it is reconstructed. Next slide. This is the photograph of that facade today. Slightly different than the other in the sense that those loading bay doors in this case have steel lintels above them. They do not have the stone apron below. It's a little hard to see, but you can kind of see behind the construction fence, there's a steel angle at the lip of the loading docks there. So a little bit different than the other side. It also has window details that are characteristic of the rest of the street, where you see actually the hinges left behind from the shutters that were there previously, which we would retain, and much like the other buildings on the street, retain those hinges that are embedded in the brick, but not the actual shutters, as the neighboring buildings that have been renovated have done the same there. excuse me. There's one in kind of top center. There is a photo from the interior of one of those mezzanine level windows where you can see that 6/6 double hung window that is existing behind the plywood today. If you go to the next slide, this is the proposal to, again, retain one of those bays as a loading bay, but of course with new doors, and also bringing that down to grade level so that that is a grade level kind of loading door. The other openings being turned into windows with glazing, again, similar to what was done at 5 Channel Center with those loading bays that were filled in with glazing. And again, this side does not have the projecting piers. It doesn't have the relief that the front side does. So this is all kind of coplanar brick facade on this side. And also slight difference than the front facade does not have the continuous sill for each 3 windows. They actually have an individual stone sill at each one. And these would be replaced again with the 6/6 double hung windows that Aaron alluded to in the historic photographs, and which we can see in some cases in the windows that remain today. And one little thing, this side actually, Medallion Avenue is slightly lower than Channel Center Street. So again, the doors are coming down to grade, but there will be, you know, a step. The level one is slightly above street level of this sign. So we can go to the next slide. And this is just an overview, just an aerial view to kind of illustrate the heights of buildings in this, both on Channel Center Street and on A Street. Again, most of those buildings, almost all of those buildings are that 80 foot plus or minus building height that's shown in profile. The one building that is taller is the new one, which you can see, which is at the 125 foot height. Which is what is proposed for 7 Channel Center with the new addition above the existing building. And if you go to the next slide, I can show diagrammatically that 125 feet to top of structure is in keeping with the other new building down the street and retaining the 3-story nature of the historic seven channel center facade there. So we go to the next next slide, then we start to look at ideas for the new construction above the existing building. So here again, there will be new floors inside of the building. There will be new structure, but all the same, we looked at it pretty hard to figure out, you know, can we get the floor levels at a more kind of modern floor to floor height that works with current office and research and development kind of uses while maintaining and not having to modify in any way the sizes or the positions or the proportions of any of the existing openings. So so essentially the base stays as described in the previous slides. And then the approach that was taken for the new construction above that up to the 125 feet is to be clearly new and different than the existing building that the building sits above, the construction sits above, and to the neighboring buildings. So there's a clear, you know, kind of obvious difference of what is new and what is old. And that is the idea here conceptually is that it's again a contrasting material. It has more glass. The sidewalls that rise above the existing, the neighboring buildings, you know, are in a zero lot line condition, so they will not have windows. So we're trying to maximize the amount of daylight on the channel center side and on the Medallion Avenue side, and then use some materials, you know, kind of a black metal appearance, which is, you know, has other kind of industrial connotations of a bit of a different time and clearly in contrast to the existing buildings. If you go to the next slide, this is the Medallion Avenue side. Again, essentially the same facade, same proportions. You know, there is kind of a subtle acknowledgement of the four piers, the kind of base spacing of both facades here. So you'll see there's kind of a heavier member, which would be on the column line of the new construction as well, but kind of picking up in a subtle way the repetition and module of the existing building, but again, being clearly new and different and discernible from the existing buildings. And then the last slide has that in perspective, not one of the last slides here, has that in perspective. And one of the things we had talked about with the advisors that we met with was, again, on the channel center side in that top left perspective, taking the new addition and setting that back about 12 inches from the face of the existing facade down below to kind of, again, accentuate the this is a new addition, kind of see the completion of the corner of the neighboring walls there. And then in the lower right image, this is where we're proposing to have the reconstructed facade set back 12 inches. So not as far as it is today, but still set back. And then the new building above that. And again, you know, in both of these cases, both of these facades having a sensitive detail where the new construction meets the existing parapet to create a shadow line there and a clear, again, demarcation between the old and the new. Next slide. And just, you know, for informational purposes, these are sections through, on the left-hand side is the east facade, which is the rear, and on the right-hand side, the west facade, which is the front, just a slice of that facade, and then the sections, how the section relates to that. So the new floor level, especially on the third floor, floor level being close, you know, right at the sill of the existing window, but still quite high and generous and a nice kind of aperture to get daylight in. So again, keeping those windows the exact same proportions, exact same size as they are today. And then in the next slide, slide is an overview of the section through the entire building, which has the floor-to-floor heights above, which are about 14 feet floor-to-floor in the new construction, and the slightly different floor-to-floor heights on levels 1 and 2, which again are trying to get a modern floor-to-floor height while maintaining the usability and clarity of those existing openings. So that's what we have. Those are all the slides. If anybody has, anybody from our team has anything to add before opening up to questions.
No, Matt, I think that's very helpful. We've just opened up to questions to the commission. Thank you.
I'm going to butt in because I have to leave. So, but I did just want to quickly comment on the channel center side, which is what we're looking at on the right. So the addition is set back how much from the parapet of the
About 12 inches.
12 inches, okay. Because that was important to me that it that have a reasonable setback, so it still reads as a parapet.
I agree, and that's true in the Medallion Avenue side as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That 12-inch setback exists on that side as well.
Right. Well, so we have on the Medallion side, we have the existing facade setback reconstructed and setback 12 inches, and then the new building actually kind of in the same plane. So both facades are setback 12 inches from the neighboring buildings. So essentially, they are in the same plane on the rear.
I mean, I think that's an important thing for the commissioners to think about on the Medallion Ave side. Essentially, you're going to be taking down that original building on that side and then rebuilding it, but closer. And I mean, that's something that we never do as far as remove existing fabric, existing buildings. And that's essentially what you're doing there. And so I'd be curious to see, I mean, is there any other way that have you looked at it where that building wall can stay where it is and then creatively have this new addition extend over that further? I mean, I think it could be done and have it and still maintain that wall that's there now set back where it is rather than just remove it. So I don't know. I think that's going to be something that it's going to be a hard sell to accept demolition.
Matt, maybe I'll jump in and let you speak to this technically, but from a constructability perspective here, in order to meet sustainability and certain other requirements of the building permit here, I believe actually both facades will need to come down and be reconstructed in place, and each brick and element would be demarcated and rebuilt as exists. But just want to make that point clear that they will need to come down in either event.
And also, I don't know why, and I don't know that if we would have done it today, but they already have, Mary, is this correct? They already have permission to demolish these buildings, this building.
That's correct. When the study report was made, it's actually listed in there that this building in particular has been already slated for demolition, and the approval for that was given before the district was even created. But the study report does say that the demolition can proceed. The demolition obviously never happened.
Yeah, there was some other proposal, I think, for that space, if I remember correctly. All right, I had forgotten that. So what you're saying then on the Channel Center side, you're going to basically have to remove that entire base as well and then just rebuild it exactly the way it is. There isn't a way to save it and build through it and around it. I mean, I know we do that all the time. I know there was the Modern Theater in the Theater District where that facade was saved. And you have to shore it up, obviously, during construction, but that's something you don't think you could do?
Yeah, again, and I'll have Matt jump in on anything technical, but from our understanding, the pre-con we've done to date, in order to satisfy all the requirements, it's been communicated that we'll need to bring down both facades. So, correct, that is the strategy here, and I think the design that we're putting forth is, notwithstanding any prior approvals for demolition, is intent to, clearly this is a historic district and we think there's great value in what's there existing, so we're just trying to keep with that that history on the three stories and rebuild it in place.
Without getting too technical on this, I'm just curious if you can describe it in layman's terms, the reason for removing the faces is basically part of the construction of the additional floors that's necessary to get them out of the way, in essence, and then put them. And the idea is to put them back after you've built the tower. Did I describe that in more or less correct terms?
Yeah, I think that's correct. When factoring in the structural elements as well as any sustainability components here,
Okay,
it's important to kind of
clear that area and then put it back.
So I guess the bottom line there is that since this permission was granted to demolish that building in its entirety anyway, I guess we're fortunate that you're willing to keep it
retain,
or at least recreate it so that it's not lost, that was a lower scaled building originally and then have this new portion.
Are we talking about recreating it, or are we talking about literally, you know, sort of peeling the face off, sticking it somewhere, do the construction and stick the face back on? I'm just trying to understand how much the actual facade is going to be sort of changed, if at all.
I think it's an important distinction.
Aside from your design, you know, ideas.
Yeah, I think it's an important distinction, and that is our intent, is to catalog the elements, as I mentioned, label the bricks and catalog and rebuild brick by brick, piece by piece.
Gotcha.
All right. So you will try to, you are going to try to salvage what's there and then reuse, I'm guessing, is what you're saying.
Correct.
All right. That's great. I mean, I that would be more than what I would have expected. And then I guess then to answer my other concern with the medallion outside, you know, it doesn't make sense then to try to necessarily keep that in the position that it's in and then build this addition on top of that, cantilevering over it. The thing that the other concern I have is, and I wish that you had the whole elevation shown so that you can see the building on the far left there, why, you know, that's obviously the height that you're matching. And what the building that's on the left that is high up, like, is that a brand new building or not?
Yeah, I believe that is a brand new building. If we go back, let's see what slide is, I can tell you. You go to maybe slide 20, should show it from the aerial photograph. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's all new construction.
That's all brand new. And so the height of that, when that was built, based on what was there at some point or what?
That I don't know. I mean, looked at that, and like I said, it's roughly 125 feet. And I know the permitted height for 7-channel center is, 125 feet is what's allowed currently.
Yeah, and you have it as a right to increase the height on this new building.
Correct. Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, this is all part of development area 53, and we actually have Jared Igram with Ruben Junius is on the line. To the extent helpful, I think he was involved probably a decade or more ago with the original permitting here. So he, to the extent you have further questions, he may have some more color on the history of the district here, but. Correct. Building has its own
height. Yeah. No. Just quickly, the chairman actually was the chair of the study committee, and that I was at those in 2008. I think Gary Russell.
I remember that.
Yeah, Gary Russell was the staffer, but this was actually attorney Rebecca Lee. I was representing the Boston Wharf, and she was representing Channel Center. So not only is the demolition pre-approved, but there's also a deemed compatible at 125. Matthew's right. That was written into. I was worried about 319A, but she was worried about this one. And you guys are all exactly right. It was to mirror the new building at 25. So there are actually three heights that were baked into the old PDA: 80 feet, these two at 125, and then the one channel center at 150.
150. Okay. All right. No, I appreciate that background. It was a long time ago, and
it was
a bit of a refresher on that. So it looks like all that you're proposing is all an as of right, so that there's no surprise in terms of the height of this building, and it won't be any higher than what's on the other end, which is good. So I guess to sum up then what you were showing, I certainly like the idea that you're going to have this new portion, the new construction, be completely different. I think that that's what it should be. Since there never was a building there, that it should have this, obviously a contemporary infill look to it. You know, I guess you can, the materials are all to be flushed out again later on. And I think it's helpful to see this whole elevation. So when you've got your new facade in juxtaposed against this other end, so that it can just, so I'm looking at it more texturally, and fenestration or the breakup of the windows and such, and how scale wise it fits in with the other side. So I think that's what I would certainly be trying to look at. And it looks like we probably are achieving that from what I could see.
Could we go back to some of those facades of the new piece just for a second? I just want to get another impression of the.
So it's like slide 21 shows.
That guy, exactly. Yeah. All right, it's sort of a, I don't know, a bit of a detail, but I'm looking at the mechanicals penthouse, the new metal equipment screen. Any thought given to, because some of the head houses and other mechanical sort of, you know, screen stuff on those other buildings are either brick. You can see that at 5 channel. I can't really recall what the other ones to the left, you know, at 9 and the rest. But any particular reason you wanted to just do a stark metal screen?
Well, it is, it is set back both from the front and the rear. So while we're looking at it in elevation, I think if you go maybe 2 more slides, you'll see the perspective views from street level. There you go. So they are actually, you know, set back from the front and from the back. So the intention is, at least from the ground level and from, you know, a reasonable distance from the building, that it's, you know, not visible in what it is, as opposed to seeing all the, you know, individual mechanical components and ducts and, you know, messiness, is screened and kind of neat looking, but also not trying to, you know, make a big gesture and draw attention to itself.
Right. Well, and in keeping, I guess, with the starkness of the sort of steel facade, I suppose, as well.
Yeah. So you're suggesting these renderings that we're seeing, that from those vantage points, you will not be seeing this mechanical equipment containment screen?
Right. I mean, these are, the screen is in the model, and, you know, the camera's placed in the top left view. That's in the park at ground level. Okay. And it's set back. You know, I could, when we come back in the future, we can have a roof plan and show you the dimensions and everything. But it is set back from both the front and the back. And these are representative, you know, they're, if you could see them, they would be visible in the view.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be nice to not see them, because I like the massing of this new piece. And I think to be, if we start seeing that mechanical screen, it's going to detract from the
draw away from it. Exactly.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I think we agree.
And I guess, you know, color, it looks like you're choosing a darker color, which is, I guess, fine. I'm trying to, you know, we're not trying to make it disappear. I just want to make sure that it feels like it fits in general. And the windows, the glass itself, is this going to be a mirrored reflective glass, or what is that going to look
like? Yeah, I'd say we haven't gotten, you know, down the road in terms of specifying glass and things like that, but I don't think the intention would be that it'd be, you know, highly reflective. I think it would be, you know, strike the balance between, we've done some buildings recently which have a great balance between a little bit of reflectivity that picks up on the color of the sky, but not, you know, not super reflective. I think it's great when you get a little dynamic quality, because sometimes you see through and sometimes you get a little reflection, and it makes it look kind of active, but it's certainly not the intention to be mirror like. And I think that the dark colors are really meant to evoke, you know, some of the colors that one often sees on painted steel, you know, in exposed structural kind of building. So whether it's, you know, this darker gray, that newer building down the street that we were talking about earlier has a kind of a medium gray or even kind of light gray metal. So, you know, those are things we'll certainly explore moving forward.
Yeah, I think so. It'd be worth looking at. I know the building that's on the corner of Farnsworth and Congress, that material, that's a metal material. I can't recall if it's a black or a gray. And that seems, that fits in, I think, very well. So
that's a really good analog, David. I was just thinking the same thing.
Which address is that? Just
so right at the corner of Congress and Farnsworth.
Okay.
It's that new residential building. It was.
I know. Yeah.
Right across from the firehouse on Farnsworth.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I think that's very similar, actually, to what we were intending.
Mm-hmm. What is the intent? I was just going to ask, what's the intent on the for material on the sidewalls, the returns?
Yeah, I think we need to give that some more attention. But I think it's shown right now. There's kind of a horizontal reveal at the or some kind of detail and shadow line at the floor line. I think the intention is that it could be metal. It could be something like terracotta. I think it does need to have a little more kind of texture to it. Right now, it's sort of scaleless and a little bit generic. So I think the intention would be, again, they can't have windows being on the property line on kind of zero lot line condition. But it certainly can have texture and a module to it, and a nice scale to it. So as I said, it could be, similar type of dark or medium gray metal that you see elsewhere, or it could be a cementitious product. I mean, I think that's something we'll have to look at more closely. Once we have your feedback that we're getting tonight, will allow us to get into more detail on those things.
So I think the renderings here are really good, but I don't know if the commission requires this or for whatever approvals are still to come, but. Somehow a little bit graphically more kind of clarity around what this new massive brick or massive box is going to look like as you're walking along, as it were. I mean, these are just a little bit too conceptual from my ability to kind of really envision it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm guessing you're going to flesh out a little bit more detail as you
certainly
to us. And then regarding the sides of the building, I think it would be helpful too. It's always a great tool to come in to us. Whatever you're planning to do in terms of the design of those sides of the upper sides of the building, if you can show examples of how that same situation was treated with other buildings in the district.
Sure.
Just kind of give us a reference, and that helps a lot with decision making on it. Not to have to emulate it, but there are other buildings that do this that pop up.
Absolutely,
how they were treated. So one other quick thing for me, I know I'm looking at the Medallion Suite side, and since there was always that loading dock, would it make sense to at least have the lower portion of underneath the sills? From the sills down to the ground, have that be a concrete to sort of echo that base of the original loading dock or not?
Yeah, it's hard to see in slide 17, is the photograph that is mostly obscured by construction fence, but you can see if you look in closely in the bottom left, it is actually, and in the center there, you can see it in the break in the fence. It's actually brick. It's sort of a steel angle that laps the leading edge of the loading dock. So it appears to be brick from that on down. And they also have the corner guards that actually you see there too.
And then I think that's another thing too, if there's the possibility to echo those corner pieces, because those are really always very identifiable feature of these loading docks to protect the corners of brick. If there's any way to sort of just abstractly pay homage to what that look might have been originally, I think would be a good thing. It would help to take the starkness of that away.
And I think it'll be, as Matthew was talking about the reconstruction process, we'll see what the state of those steel lintels is in terms of whether they can be sandblasted and repainted, or if they need to be replaced in kind. I think we agree all those details are they're true to the kind of industrial nature of the building.
All right. I mean, I think this is a great direction. So if there are any other comments from the commissioners?
I agree.
And then these are all the windows are going to be the divided lights, like you had said. They'll be, are they, I assume, metal, or were they wood? Were these, they were probably wood windows originally, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think the originals were wood, but the hope would be they would be, you know, similar to the other buildings on the street, yeah. You know, have new metal windows.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So with that, I think that, do you feel you have enough of a direction from what we gave you tonight?
Yeah, I think that's all very valuable feedback. I guess my question would be, heading into a formal design review process, just any guidance as it relates to, you know, any interim, anything additional you'd like to see before a formal submission, and or if we're going straight to a formal submission, beyond some of what we talked about, if there's any other details that you would like included. I've taken notes on what the feedback to date, but I just want to understand if in the presentation or any really elements to focus on in terms of, you know, level of detail that you want to see before you're able to grant approval.
I think typically if you came in with a full application, and if there were a few things that we felt could be tweaked, they can always just be done with a proviso, you know, if it wasn't something that was going to be a major shift or a change. But I think in the, you know, we certainly want to see a little bit more fleshed out about the facade, and yep. Particularly how is that glass? It looks like there's a more glass than there is going to be the you know, divisions between them, and that kind of thing doesn't exist in this district now. And I just want to make sure that it's not going to look like, you know, Millennium Tower or something, or, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So just bear that in mind, that the typical look is to, yes, have, you can have glass windows, but then you got to have the divisions between them to give the building facade that sort of texture that all of these buildings share.
Understood.
I think this is great. I look forward to then seeing, and, you know, also to be specific on what you think you can save and cannot save. I assume you're going to probably be doing more research on that in terms of the detailing, you know, how you're going to put it all back. I have my doubts that you're going to be able to save a lot of that brick. But, you know, if you do, how are you going to try and match new brick to that brick? You know, that might be a fool's errand to try to do that. It would be great if you could, but you know, I think we'd want to see how that's going to work out. But so I think that's all.
Well, very much appreciated. Very helpful feedback. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Great.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So that is the last item. Since we did our admins before. So we have some news tonight with Mary's last hearing. Oh, I'm sorry, we do, let me back up. We do need to do the minutes. Let me, before we get into that. Sorry about that. Let me see here, where is the, okay, so we need to ratify the minutes from the September 9, 2021 hearing. So is there a motion to accept those minutes?
Sure, move to accept the minutes.
All right, and then the second.
I'll second that.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. All right, and then the staff updates.
Now staff updates. So, yeah. Unfortunately, yes, this is my final hearing. I will miss everybody. You've all been wonderful to work with, but I'm going to take this time and focus a bit on my family. So it's very bittersweet.
It's the right thing. I know you put a lot of thought into this. And, I am going to miss you, because I think what I loved about you is you had this amazing preparation before coming to these hearings. And that helped keep everything on an even keel. And when we had a question about something, you knew the answer to. even if you weren't not necessarily involved with it way back. So that's been great, and I'm going to miss that. Plus, you're a darn nice person, too.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you. Thank you. Like I said, you've all been wonderful.
I'm going to miss you, too. I'm going to miss you, too. But I think the city should, frankly, do more to hold on to young parents.
Right.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. It's a very difficult subject.
Yeah. So, and the whole COVID thing complicates it all. I'm sure. Of course. So you remembered. And I hope that, who knows, someday maybe you'll come back. Well, it'll probably be a different capacity, but
we'll see. Like I said, the BLC isn't going anywhere. So
Right. So
we'll see what happens in a year or so.
All right. So with that said, we have a motion for adjournments.
So moved.
All right, second.
Second.
All right, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, none. All right, Mary, a big hug. We can't give you a big
best
hug.
Best of luck to you, Mary. Virtual hug. Thanks for everything.
Thank you. Seriously. We'll keep in touch.
Yes.
Good. Definitely.
All right.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Mary, thanks from the neighborhood, too.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just saw your hand up.
I just wanted to say a quick thank you on behalf of Fort Point and all the residents here. Thanks, Rachel, all that you've done.
You're here.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
That's great. All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Good night, all.
Thank you.